Welcome to the HN Pod, your daily dive into the front page of Hacker News. Today is Tuesday, May 13th, 2025, and this is episode number 33.
Episode 33 already, what?
I know, right? So today we've got a really interesting mix. We're going to look at whether older computers could actually stick around longer if software was better optimized.
That's a big one.
Yeah. Then there's some concerning news about Jiyun Screen, you know, the terminal tool.
Oh, yeah, Screen. Been around forever.
Exactly. Plus, a new hardware vulnerability affecting Intel chips branch privilege injection. Sounds serious.
Definitely need to unpack that one.
We'll also touch on workplace stress and relationships, and maybe surprisingly, why turning a PDF into text is harder than you'd think.
A classic, simple but not easy problem. It's quite a spread today, touching hardware, software, security, even the human side of tech.
For sure. So let's get started with that first topic. The idea that the world could run on older hardware if we just prioritized optimizing software.
Right. And the Hacker News discussion really dug into this. The core idea is, you know, are we just on this endless hardware upgrade treadmill because we have to be? Or is it more about where software development focus lies?
Exactly. And the comments threw up some great points, like the whole wow factor thing. The pressure to deliver shiny new features often pushes optimization down the list.
Yeah, someone mentioned the AltaVista to Google Jump or MapQuest to Google Maps.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about raw speed. It was the whole experience, right? Mm-hmm. That felt like a leap.
Totally. But then someone else pointed out that, you know, top quality isn't always king. They use restaurants as an example. A decent, well-located place can do great business even if it's not fancy.
Stable mediocrity, I think they call it, which sounds a bit harsh, but it makes sense. There's this tension between amazing quality and, well, what people are actually willing to pay for or what's convenient.
Yeah, finding that sweet spot.
And that ties into the economics discussion, too. The idea of inferior goods, not necessarily bad quality, but things people buy more of when money's tight. Like maybe OnePlus phone versus the latest iPhone during a downturn.
Uh-huh.
It's not that the OnePlus is low quality. It's just market dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Demand shifts based on wealth sentiment. It's not always about the absolute best tech winning out.
I saw that perfume analogy too, the diluted stuff selling better sometimes. Kind of weird.
Yeah, it suggests the market demand isn't always for the purest, most optimized version. Sometimes cheaper or slightly different is what clicks.
Okay, so if the market isn't always demanding peak optimization, why the constant hardware push? What were the theories there?
Well, a big one was software eating hardware. Mm-hmm. Basically, new hardware is so powerful it papers over inefficient software. Developers maybe don't feel the need to optimize quite as much.
Right. The hardware will just handle it.
Pretty much. And then there's developer incentives. Are they rewarded more for shipping features fast or for making existing code run like lightning on old machines? Often it's the former.
Makes sense. Shipping is king.
And the idea of externalizing costs. Instead of the company optimizing heavily, the cost in terms of needing better hardware or more bandwidth gets pushed onto the user.
Ouch. That feels a bit cynical, but probably true sometimes.
Someone brought up John Carmack too, remember? His thoughts on losing the craft of optimization because resources are just so abundant now.
Yeah, that was interesting. Like, what if powerful hardware suddenly became scarce?
Exactly. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Suddenly, super efficient code running on old chips would be gold. People scavenging parts.
Mm.
A bit sci-fi. But it makes you think.
It does. Though there was the counterpoint about diminishing returns, right?
Yes.
Like how much effort do you spend squeezing out tiny performance gains versus building something new?
True. There's a balance. But then you see something like the Nintendo Switch running demanding games on relatively modest hardware.
Right. And someone else said modern systems should feel instant, comparing Slack's startup time to, say, a command line tool.
Yeah, like Pappas versus Zotero. The difference can be stark. And it often comes down to layers upon layers of libraries and frameworks in modern development.
Yeah.
They speed things up initially, but add overhead.
So much abstraction.
And that even touches on things like memory safety debates.
Mm-hmm.
C and C++ offer potential speed, but maybe at the cost of security or complexity compared to languages with built-in checks like Pascal or Ada, though those have their own trade-offs.
Okay, so wrapping this one up, it really makes you question the whole upgrade cycle. Is it genuine need? Or is it driven by, well, a lack of optimization focus and this constant chase for features, regardless of the cost?
It's a fundamental question about sustainability and priorities in tech, for sure.
All right, let's switch gears. Next up, GNU Screen. Multiple security issues found.
Yeah, Screen, like I said, it's been a staple for terminal multiplexing for ages. But the immediate reaction in the comments was kind of, Well, is anyone really using Screen anymore in 2025?
Right, with Tremux and Zelig being so popular now.
Exactly. There's this feeling it might be, you know, a bit obsolete. Though interestingly, someone noted Zelig's binary size is quite large compared to Demix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sparked a little side discussion about dependencies versus features. Does the extra functionality justify the size? But the main thing was the security advisory.
And specifically the Situid aspect, that seemed to worry people.
Big time. Situid binaries, where a program runs with higher privileges. That's just seen as a major risk these days. Too many historical vulnerabilities.
So the debate becomes, keep patching this complex old tool or just move to something newer and potentially simpler.
That's the crux of it. Is it worth maintaining something with such a large potential attack surface? Or should we favor alternatives like MTM, Abduco DVTM tools, designed to be simpler, fewer lines of code?
It's that classic tension between sticking with the familiar versus embracing something potentially more secure but different.
Yeah, the maintenance burden versus security posture.
Okay, let's get technical now. Branch privilege injection, a new hardware vulnerability in Intel chips.
Yeah, this one sounds quite intricate. It affects Intel CPUs basically from the 9th-gen Coffee Lake refresh onwards, though there might be implications for older 7th-gen chips too, specifically around bypassing certain mitigations.
Okay, so what is it? How does the injection work?
So it's tied to the branch predictor, the part of the CPU that tries to guess what instructions come next to speed things up. The problem isn't the predictor itself, but how it behaves during privilege switches.
Like user mode to kernel mode?
Exactly, or guest VM to hypervisor. The research found that predictor updates made before the switch might not clear out properly, asynchronously. So those old predictions can still influence execution after the privilege level changes.
Whoa. So it mixes up privileges?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
It leads to incorrect privilege association because of this timing race condition. They're calling it branch predictor race conditions. It's exploiting a feature, a timing nuance, not necessarily a straightforward bug.
Clever, but scary. What's Intel doing? Microcode updates.
Yeah, Intel has released microcode updates. Mm. The researchers tested them and found up to maybe 2.7% performance hit on Alder Lake. Software mitigations are also possible, but the overhead varies more, potentially up to 8% or so, depending on the chip.
And AMD, ARM, are they effective?
According to the research, no. Not by this specific vulnerability class anyway. So the advice is standard. Update your OS, update your BIOS firmware, get those patches.
This feels very Spectre Meltdown-y, like another speculative execution issue.
That was definitely the vibe in the comments. People are seeing it as a continuation, maybe even exploiting the mitigations for the old flaws. And it led to some pretty resigned comments, like maybe truly isolating code on these complex modern chips is just fundamentally harder than we thought.
Mm.
Almost impossible, some suggested.
So does this whole saga flaw, patch performance hit, new flaw point to a deeper problem in processor design? What are the long-term implications here?
It certainly raises that question. Are we hitting fundamental limits? And what does that mean for future performance and security? It's an ongoing challenge.
Okay, let's shift focus completely now to something more human. Prioritizing relationships in high-stress work environments feels relevant to many.
Absolutely. The article's core idea is simple. Good relationships help you cope when work gets intense. But naturally, the HN comments added layers of complexity.
Like what?
Well, someone made a funny distinction between asking a helpful colleague for help versus dealing with someone who needs constant handholding for basics. That lack of self-sufficiency in others can be a huge stressor itself.
Oh, I can imagine. That feeling that some people just won't try to figure things out.
Exactly. That came up a lot. Which then shifts the burden onto others. It led to talk about mentoring effectively, but also, you know, the tough part, managing underperformers out.
Yeah, that's never easy.
And this really interesting phrase came up, incompetence that is too impolite to mention. Like this underlying issue, often stemming from leadership, that creates massive stress, but nobody talks about it directly.
Wow. That's uncomfortable, but probably resonates.
It does. And related to that was the idea of investing your energy wisely. Do you spend time trying to fix someone fundamentally struggling or focus on mentoring those with potential?
Resource allocation, essentially.
Not much. And conversely, the positive impact of really great developers, how they can lift the whole team.
And what about just managing your own stress?
Yeah, practical stuff came up too. Avoiding toxic people, setting boundaries for your mental health. Someone rightly pointed out that stress isn't always about incompetence. Sometimes it's just workload and deadlines.
True.
But again, it comes back to consciously choosing where to put your limited time and energy, and the idea that rockstar engineers actually reduce stress by being predictable and reliable.
Interesting angle. What about communication styles?
Oh yeah, the difference between being brutally honest versus being tactful, and the trap of being a yes person versus being the one who raises concerns, like the organization's conscience.
That's a tough line to walk.
Definitely. And from a career angle, building your network, super important for resilience, especially with layoffs being a reality. Someone mentioned emotional combat and trying to see other perspectives during conflict.
Lots of angles.
And a final point was just knowing your worth. Don't constantly try to fit a mold that diminishes your skills. So thinking about all this, the question for you becomes, how do you strike that balance between getting your own work done and investing in those crucial, sometimes complicated workplace relationships when things are stressful?
It's a constant juggling act, isn't it?
It really is.
Okay, finally, let's quickly touch on this last one. PDF to text. Seems so basic, right? Just grab the text from a PDF.
You'd think.
Yeah.
But the discussion highlighted how surprisingly tricky it can be. Sure, you've got command line tools like PDF to text, maybe with the layout flag, that work for simple cases. But the sheer variety of ways PDFs are constructed, different encodings, text flows, columns, embedded fonts, images with text, means reliably extracting accurate text, preserving layout, is actually a pretty complex challenge. The fact it still sparks discussion shows it's not a solved problem.
Huh. So another case of look simple isn't.
Exactly.
Well, that wraps up our topics for today on the HN Pod. We went from software bloat and hardware potential through security issues and old tools and new chips to workplace dynamics and finished with the surprising complexity of PDFs.
It's quite the journey through the tech landscape, trying to connect those dots that pop up on Hacker News every day. That's really what we aim to do here for you.
So maybe something to think about as you go through your day. Are we getting the most out of the technology we already have? Do these constant hardware vulnerabilities and software maintenance challenges mean we need to rethink how we build and use things?
And how do those human factors, the relationships, the stress, the communication, fit into that bigger picture of tech's future? These threads, efficiency, security, the human element, they're probably more connected than we realize in shaping what comes next.